RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. With so much emphasis these days on the need to achieve gender equality in all areas of professional life, including surgery, it's sobering to consider the challenges that faced women who chose a surgical career 100 years ago. These women were pioneers who faced opposition and prejudice as they pursued their medical careers, no more so than when they applied for surgical roles during World War I. For many, their stories have remained untold, but that's changing now. Associate Professor Susan Newhouse of the University of Adelaide Department of Surgery has researched and now written about many of these remarkable women in medicine. It's the subject of a talk Susan will give at the annual Scientific Congress in Adelaide in May, titled Women, War and RACs. In this podcast, Susan Newhouse tells Heather Dawson more about the prevailing attitudes of the day that held women surgeons back, and they weren't alone.
Well, it wasn't really just female surgeons, but female doctors generally had a really very difficult time in trying to enter the profession. The last century was certainly a time in which women were increasingly receiving an education, but I suppose there was an expectation that they would be sufficiently happy with an education and not wish to then take that one step further and move it on to working in the professions. And it was particularly medicine, I think, a very difficult time. Queen Victoria herself was very scathing about the idea of female doctors. She thought that they would be an absolute abomination and were morally corrupt. And it's against that background that women really did have to fight to not just obtain a medical education, but subsequently to be able to go on and use those skills and practice medicine.
Now, the outbreak of World War I brought more opportunities for women surgeons, I understand, but even then they faced huge prejudice, didn't they?
Absolutely, and it's debatable whether they actually brought opportunities or whether the women actually created opportunities out of the war. Certainly when Australia went to war, there was an expectation that male surgeons would contribute to the war effort, but very implicit in that call was that women were not expected to apply. But there were a number of Australian women, in fact there were at least 20 women overall, who subsequently made their way to various theatres of war across the First World War. And they were absolutely determined to make their way and to make their effort and to prove that they had the ability and to provide their service, which I think was probably the driving factor for them. But it was a very difficult road. They certainly weren't accepted. When they originally tried to reply, they were universally rebuffed by the Australian Army and told that their skills and their services were not wanted.
Well, one of the great women pioneers of those days that you've written about was Agnes Bennett. Tell us a little bit about her and indeed what she was told when she offered her services to the Australian Army at the start of World War I.
Well, Agnes Bennett was interesting because she was 55 at the outbreak of the war. She already had done some advanced training in surgery and she was very keen to contribute. Her brothers had enlisted into the AIF and so she turned up at a recruitment centre expecting that her skills would be warmly welcomed, but instead was sent away with a very strong rebuff that, in fact, if she wanted to contribute to the war effort, her skills would be far better if she was to go home and knit. That wasn't actually unique to her. There were a number of other women who also received similarly sort of scathing rebuttals, but certainly knit they did not. They instead took it upon themselves and often funded their own way across to Europe and joined up with other women from the continent who were equally determined to contribute to the war effort. And it's from there that they embarked on what I think are some of the most extraordinary journeys through the First World War of female gallantry.
Well, another prominent figure you write about is Lillian Cooper. What can you tell us about her and the ways in which she overcame, you know, so much opposition and prejudice?
Well, I guess by the outbreak of war, Lillian was probably quite used to prejudice. She had actually come out to Australia and become the first woman practitioner registered in Queensland. And by the time the war came about, Lillian had really got a very established reputation in Queensland. She was very used to fighting opposition. She was described as being tall, angular, brusque and prone to outrageous bursts of swearing. So I suspect she was a somewhat intimidating woman. But she certainly had worked very hard. She had a good, solid reputation. She was well respected by her peers. And that had been a long journey for her because when she first started operating, she had anaesthetists who refused to operate for her. She had patients that the hospital refused to admit. But eventually she just wore down all the opposition, I suspect. And it's said that it was just her capacity and her sheer good nature that got her over the line.
Are there any other female surgeons of the last century that you'd like to mention here who achieved professional success and recognition despite so much gender bias?
Look, there were quite a number of them, but they don't all appear on the college roll. Lillian Cooper was the first woman admitted to fellowship, and she was admitted only when she was 66. So a number of the women surgeons, such as Agnes Bennett, Mary De Garis, who were surgeons in every sense of the word, in terms that they were undertaking battlefield surgery under some of the harshest conditions that we can imagine during the First World War. And yet when they came back from the war, they really were not able to get surgical posts. They were excluded from surgical roles. And so as a result of that, they're not included in our corporate memory of who meets the criteria of being a surgeon and who does not. And by way of example, I guess Constance Darcy, Dame Darcy, is an interesting example. She's someone who graduated from medical school at the same time as Susie Riley. That was a very prominent case where a woman who had graduated very high in her class would have expected to have obtained a residency position because they were based on merit. But in fact, the hospital said, no, there will be no residency positions for women. So Dame Constance Darcy actually came to Adelaide in order to pursue her residency because South Australia was somewhere that would accept female doctors at the time. She didn't serve in the First World War, but she subsequently went on to work as an obstetrician and gynaecologist and has really contributed an extraordinary amount to the profession in that role. So I think there are a number of these women. It's just that we really don't know their stories.
But looking back from our perspective now, it seems bizarre, doesn't it, that the immense proven abilities and dedication of those female surgeons during World War I just didn't help them all that much when the war ended. So what happened?
It wasn't really just the surgeons. I think at the end of the war, there was a sense of society wanting to get back to its pre-war societal values. I think there were a number of things that really created an environment where male stories had been preferenced over female stories, where the official records didn't really record their war service as being valid. These women were not given commissions, and as such, their service doesn't appear in the official war records, which makes things a little difficult for them. And I guess also for the Australian women, it was really that they were just back in the same position of competing for jobs, and they were competing against men who equally had quite extensive war experience.
Now, as you researched their history, did you gain the impression that each of these women in their different ways needed particular personalities and probably the determination of steel to ride through all the barriers in their way?
Absolutely. I think, as I say, Lillian Violet Cooper, I suspect, would be a very intimidating character to meet. But the one thing you take away from all of these women is this sense of enormous commitment, of enormous dedication, and just a determination that they were going to succeed, whatever the odds were. I find it very interesting that none of these women were married, none of them had a family. And it's fascinating to me to reflect on that and say, was that actually a conscious choice that was made? I wonder whether it was a choice that they were necessarily happy with at the time. But regardless of that, there's no doubt that these women all threw themselves into what they did with every bit of themselves.
Now, what role did RACS play in recognising and assisting these women surgeons? And how important has that been in paving the way for future generations?
That's a difficult question because I think that the college has a great opportunity to be able to honour these women in a way that would really fit well with its current campaign in terms of respect and diversity. If we look, though, at the first 50 years of the college, only 32 women were admitted to fellowship during that time. So the representation of women in surgery has been a very slow progress over those years. I think that there is huge opportunity for the college to embrace these stories. It ran an exhibition last year, which was very well received. But it's important that we within the college understand our own story and that we have the opportunity to engage with these women in a way that perhaps historically we haven't.
Now, could I ask you, on a more personal note, what has generated your interest in women surgeons and war? Does it stem in part from your own involvement in the army and deployment overseas?
Absolutely. I suppose there are a number of things that I find fascinating about these particular women, but it certainly was my time when I was in Afghanistan that I suppose I first really found myself reflecting on what it meant to be a female surgeon, what it meant to be a mother who was working in a war zone away from my family and my children, about how that was viewed, and I suppose also about opportunity, because for me, opportunities have been given. They have not been something that I've had to fight for in the way that these women did. And to me, it was a great shame, and I really felt quite ashamed of the fact that I didn't know the stories of these women, that I hadn't engaged with these women who'd gone before. And I think too often in this day and age, we forget that we really have as a society come an immense way in the last 100 years, and that doors that sometimes we sail through without even taking any notice of were doors that were really opened through very, very hard work and endeavour of those that have been before.
So, final question, how important do you believe it is to be reminded about these pioneering women, not just for women entering the profession, but for all surgeons?
Well, I don't think it's just all surgeons. I think it is our society at large. If we take the view, and I strongly take the view, that the stories that we tell are the stories that define us as a society, it's important that our narratives are complete. We've spent a long period of time over the last few years focusing on World War I. There's a great role that World War I has played in shaping our society. But we need to understand that the narratives that we speak of need to be inclusive. And it's not just women. We're discovering new narratives of Aboriginal contributions to World War I, for example. But as far as the women are concerned, I absolutely want my daughter's generation to know these stories. I want every young woman entering medical school to know the stories of the women that have come before, because I think it's important. It's part of our national history. It's part of who we are as a profession. And at the end of the day, these are extraordinary Australians who have just worked so hard against such prejudice, but have done so and brought such credit on themselves, on our profession and on our nation, and their stories deserve to be known.
Associate Professor Susan Newhouse, University of Adelaide, Department of Surgery. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Buongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Buongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.